tomorrow.
Welcome back. This is Allison.
And Beverly.
We are here once again with Shaky Understanding. This week we are talking about Julius Caesar. This is definitely a little bit of a complicated play, so why don't you take it away with Shakespeare Abridged?
So Julius Caesar has just come back, having won this huge war against this guy named Pompey, who took over Rome, and everyone used to like Pompey, but now they're like, Julius Caesar is the best! And everyone's super stoked on Julius Caesar. Well, most people are. Now, Brutus is a good friend of Caesar, and Anthony is Caesar's right-hand man. And they're, like, best friends. And Cassius is Brutus's good friend, but Caesar and Cassius aren't quite good friends. Caesar says to Anthony himself that he is suspicious of Cassius. And then they all go off stage, and Brutus and Cassius have a talk, and Cassius talks of how it's sort of unusual that Caesar is praised by everyone so much when Brutus is just as good a guy as him. And it's kind of interesting that Caesar is sort of grasping at power where he shouldn't be. We find out that Caesar has been in front of these crowds, and they offered him a crown. And now Rome is a republic. Like, there's an emperor, but there's also, like, a senate and everything like that. So the idea of Caesar being king isn't something that Cassius is excited about. And Brutus thinks that's a terrible idea, too. And they have this whole show where Caesar's offered the crown 3 times. He turns it away every time. So the crowd is like, oh, he's so humble, it's great. But Cassius sees it's all in act. And he says so to Brutus. And then Brutus leaves and Cassius tells his other friend Casca, he's like, I'm gonna leave letters for Brutus telling him how the people love him and how they want him to be the ruler of Rome. So there's sort of this conspiracy starting up to murder Caesar because he's growing too ambitious. So then we next see Brutus at his house, and he can't sleep. He finds the letters, and it helps convince him that maybe people do like him, and maybe he would be a good leader. Cassius comes over with a bunch of other conspirators from the Senate, and they all agree that they're going to murder Caesar. Cassius suggests that they also murder Anthony, because he thinks Anthony will cause problems. But Brutus says, no, we're only murdering Caesar because Caesar is growing too ambitious, and that's the reason we're murdering him. If we start murdering other people, people will think it's a power grab and that we're just trying to cover ourselves. But Cassius thinks it's a bad idea, but he agrees to not go after Anthony. Now all the conspirators leave, and we're left with a scene between Portia, who is Brutus's wife, and she has this beautiful speech about how Brutus is up and he's walking around not sleeping. And she says, you clearly are distraught by something, you need to tell me. And he ends up telling her. And then we see her freaking out in the next scene out in the streets, telling her servant to go see what's happening because she wants to know if they get stopped for the murder, if the murder happens, they get away with it, what's gonna happen. So then there's all these terrible things happening. Meanwhile, like, there's lightning storms, there's lions running around Rome. They say that a lion whelped in the streets, which I think means gave birth. Like, it just had a bunch of baby lions in the middle of the street. I'm getting looks of horror from Allison right now. So Caesar has a wife, Calpurnia, and she says, do not go to the Senate today. Please don't. I had a dream that your statue was spurting forth blood, and I dream terrible things will happen to you today. And he goes, no, I'm not gonna listen to that. And then he gets convinced. But then Decius, one of the conspirators, comes in and says, oh no, trust me, Caesar, that was a good dream. It's because the people of Rome are gonna use the great blood of Caesar to rebuild Rome in a great way. And he's like, oh, cool. And then he goes to the Senate and is murdered by everyone. So the conspirators end up stabbing Caesar in the back, including Brutus and Cassius. And Anthony comes up and tells all the conspirators, you're all my friends. I don't know why you did this, and I'm very upset because this is my best friend. But I am interested in hearing your reasoning at the funeral. And he asks to speak at the funeral as well, and Brutus allows it. Cassius is like, don't do that. That's a bad idea. Don't let him speak. And Brutus is like, no, we'll let him speak, and we'll tell them it was our choice to let him speak, and tell him to just say all the good stuff Caesar did. And so Anthony says, thank you. And then everyone leaves except Anthony, and it's revealed that he is angry as hell, and he is ready to go to war over this. And Caesar's son Octavius has just come back to Rome, and they're gonna get together and discuss what to do next. So at the funeral, his famous speech, Anthony says, friends, Romans, countrymen, riles the crowd up into a rage after Brutus had just placated them by saying, we did this for Rome. We did it because Caesar was ambitious and he was going to make you all slaves and take away your freedom. And then Anthony just comes out and says, nope, they totally betrayed him. They betrayed you. And they took away this great man from you who cared about you. And he lies and says that he left you all a bunch of money in his will and all this land. And basically riots break out and Rome is just like, everything's getting burned. Innocent people are getting killed who have the same name as some of the conspirators. Craziness. And then we jump in time in the play. So the next act you see, they're in war. There's a war between Anthony and Octavius and their armies, and Brutus and Cassius and their armies. Brutus and Cassius's armies are not doing very well. And Anthony and Octavius seem to have more numbers, and it seems like people are responding better to them. So they're getting more numbers in their armies. Brutus and Cassius, deciding where to go next, end up deciding to go take a big stand at Philippi. And Cassius doesn't think it's a good idea, but Brutus convinces him that it's the right thing to do so that the other army doesn't become bigger with more people joining it. We then see Caesar's ghost comes to Brutus at night when no one else is around, everyone else is asleep, and says, I'll see you at Philippi. And you know, like, oh, everything's about to go terribly wrong. And so at the Battle of Philippi, it's very bloody. Everything from then on is just like Brutus and Cassius's side taking heavy losses. And there's a scene where Cassius is seeing his tents on fire, and he sends in a soldier named Titinius out to see if his armies are winning or not, because he can't quite see from where he is. He's been running away from battle, basically. And he sees his tents on fire, and he kills himself because he doesn't want to be taken as a prisoner to Rome. And then Titinius comes back and goes, oh my god, I can't believe we won! This is crazy! And he sees that Cassius has killed himself. And so he ends up killing himself. And then, right after that, Brutus comes up and is like, oh no, Cassius killed himself, and this guy killed himself. This is horrible. I don't have time to mourn this because I gotta fight this war. And then they go off and do some more fighting, and then there's just a scene. You see Brutus asking one by one each of his soldiers to hold his sword so he can run on it. And he's just completely devoid of hope at that point to win this war. And he ends up running himself on his sword and killing himself. And he says, I can't remember what he says. He says it much better than I do. But he says, Caesar, you got your revenge. The sword that killed you ended up killing us too. Then Octavius comes out with Anthony and, being a good politician, says, like, all of these men will be held honorable funerals, so Brutus and Cassius and all them, and we will unite Rome again, and I'm in charge. Thanks, everybody. And then that's the end.
Whew. A lot of death.
What up?
A lot of death.
What up, death in history?
Thanks for running us through all of that madness.
Ooh, right after running through swords.
I know. Oh. It was right on the front of my mind.
There it was.
In the front of my mind. So there we are. So thanks for that. We have a very awesome special guest this week.
Yeah.
We actually have Portia herself.
Yeah, that's right.
Welcome, Brutus. Portia.
Thank you.
Brutus's wife herself.
Yes. She's here. Don't question it. Just nope. Let it be. I'm like here. Looper and
Looper
don't
call.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's a common thing. You gotta hit all the wives with the bloody goat's blood.
Right.
It's common. Right. It happens all the time. I mean, it helps with the fertility.
Just to put you in the context of the play, the Looper Call is what you see happening in the beginning of the play when Caesar comes back.
Because Calpurnia's infertile.
Caesar's wife apparently doesn't have children.
He just can't get it up.
That's true, too.
I don't like Caesar.
Does he get slapped with the goats?
No, she does.
That's kind of messed up, though.
It's as Antony really runs around, he's like, so, Looper Call for you, Looper Call for you. I don't need any. I'm fertile.
Oh, nice.
I died. I ate fire before I could give birth.
Ugh, you were so close.
I mean, you had to eat the fire. It was an unimaginable world to live in. So I can do it.
Truly.
So you ate fire. That was your chosen method?
Yep, I ate fire. And Brutus wasn't upset about it at all. I was really pissed, like, on the other side of the veil.
I know.
He was a little like, I mean, I guess, no, Portia's dead, but let's continue planning the war.
He was a little nonchalant, but I think
he was a lot nonchalant.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's pretty personal. You're right. He was a lot nonchalant, but I think he was, like, really torn up about it, but was trying to be a good soldier in his defense.
Yeah. Your wife kills herself because, like, you killed somebody.
I guess she died, but I don't want to talk about it, Cassius. That's kind of fucked up. Do you ever think that there was a thing between you and Cassius?
No.
Not, like, you personally, but do you think there might have been something from his side? Because he does say, if it were me, like, that would be...
And see, Cassius is just that guy. He's, like, the bro that always steals your husband. Ugh. Like he's like my cock block.
Like he's like sitting in the
yeah,
den.
Yeah, like, and you're with, like, God damn it.
With Brutus.
Yeah, like
you taking some brewskis.
Yeah, like if there was an attraction, it was all on his side. I'm like, really? You having guys' night again?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No more pizza and beer. I just want my husband. Mm-hmm. Without conspiracy.
Because you got that fertile life.
Yeah, you got that fertile life. I do.
Cool. Okay.
Were you pregnant when you ate fire?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think that the creator had textual support that represented that. But
I'm just curious because when we were reading your story, mm-hmm. he does say like, "Oh, you shouldn't be out and about at this time of night." I mean, maybe he's just being concerned, but you know what I mean? Like, you could totally see a diversion where she's like pregnant.
I mean, I get that. Like, because like there's a lot of things in like with like my good friend Ophelia, they all think she's pregnant because
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no,
because that's why it's like so serious.
Yeah,
that Hamlet's like not a love.
Yeah, no, I mean, and she and so like
that's a very interesting.
Yeah, I
interpretation.
But I can totally see what you're saying. But I think you're layering too much concern because he's just concerned that I'm getting out of bed at night and listening to what he's talking about. It's an interesting concept.
Was just in my mind. I had a lot of thoughts in my mind.
But I didn't piano stick, you know, it was 44 BC.
Right. So who knows?
No, I don't know.
Another thing that occurred to me while we were reading it.
Yeah.
First of all, this play is so much like Game of Thrones. Like, what is happening?
It's the original Game of Thrones.
Everyone wants to be in power. Cassius is just like...
He's the little finger.
Yeah, he's like, hey, what if you did this? And, he's, like, playing everybody against each other. So, I agree with you. He's a dick, and everything is his fault.
Yes, it is.
He needs a just...
He needs a woman.
Or a man.
Whatever.
Whatever floats your boat, Cassius. My other thought was, while we were reading it, I think it'd be so interesting to stage a version of this with really famous politicians and have people, like, obviously being whoever they were. Because my original thought, and it sort of spun into a question as well, was... Because obviously the election cycle right now is a madhouse.
Maybe you've seen this on, you know, like Facebook video portion. I don't know if they have that in the veil.
Right.
I mean, we do. Like, we can, like, see stuff.
I'm in for it. Okay.
So we've got that going on in America right now. I was thinking, like, if somebody was really smart, they'd stage a version of Julius Caesar real quick with all the people.
Because nothing says quick like a Shakespeare production.
Whip it out real quick. Somebody with all of the characters. I mean, obviously, they'd keep their original names, but they would be clearly...
Bernie Sanders
and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and all these people.
Okay, but then who's Caesar?
But that was my question.
I was thinking
about it. Who is Caesar and who is
maybe
Mark
Obama
Anthony?
Is Caesar?
Oh, maybe Obama's Caesar.
And
but
then
that's interesting.
And then like the winner
then,
of the political election. Because
I was thinking like,
Bruce's.
Well, is originally. When we were reading it, I was thinking, Donald Trump is Caesar because I can clearly see why people would think maybe he shouldn't be in power. But then, after he dies, you realize, like, maybe you were supposed to be on Caesar's side. It's a very interesting play in that it makes you, or at least it makes me feel like I don't really know whose side that I should be on.
You can consider all sides.
You can consider all sides. So then it was like, I like the idea of Obama is Caesar. What if Bernie Sanders is Caesar? And then, like, Marco Rubio is someone else. And, like, it would just be such a really interesting production, and somebody needs to do it, or do a parody of it, or something. Oh my god, it's such a good idea. So, read the play, saw a production that you were in, Beverly.
Yes, I was in.
Which was great. Good. When reading it, this time, besides all of the crazy politically-ness in it, making up more words, politics, there's already a word for that.
It's not like a Shakespeare thing, we need to make a new one, because it's there. Go ahead.
It's there. All the politics in it. I also, this is a thought that I had, and then when I was doing some research, I saw other people have this thought too, so I felt real smart, so give me my gold star this week.
You get a gold star.
Yay! Okay, so, both Caesar and Brutus have their wives, and they have almost the same scene of, like, please don't go,
yeah.
please tell me what's wrong. And it's such an interesting commentary on what you should be doing in, like, your moral private life and what society expects of you or what you're doing in your public life. Because it annoys me in some plays when characters, or some shows, when characters don't tell the truth, when for almost no apparent reason, just kind of to make the plot be the plot. And I'm like, why don't you just tell them what's wrong? Mm-hmm. I don't understand. And in this play, I feel that it's so justified. And then when I was reading about this and how, you know, how it kind of represents the private life versus the public life and how you represent yourself and just the duties that you have in different spheres of society, made me think of what we have now with social media and the way that people are representing themselves on Facebook or on Instagram or on Twitter, and, oh, my life's so great, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And then if you really talk to that person in person, face to face, a lot of times that doesn't match up. And there's been a lot of studies recently where people are, you know, they're presenting one attitude and one life online, whereas in their real life may not be going quite as well. So it would just be interesting to, I don't know, have them, like, tweeting stuff or something.
Yeah, I definitely think modern messaging is an interesting way to tackle the public versus private life.
Yeah, just have people tweeting at Brutus. Hey, Brutus, you're the best. Why don't you be in charge?
It's like when you can, I don't know if you know this, but you can go online and buy followers.
Yes.
So you can get, like, 1,000 followers for someone. Be like, if Cassius bought followers for Brutus instead of, like, planting letters at his statue. Which, by the way, Brutus checks his statue for letters. That's also hilarious.
It's great.
It's like refreshing your Facebook
feed. How many likes did my photo get on Instagram? Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, 44 BC was quite a long time ago at this point. But do you have any comments or anything on, like, the public versus private life? You seem like a very strong woman and pretty active in society. So how... Do you want to just comment on that?
Yeah, no, I feel like Brutus was, in my opinion,
yeah.
at the beginning, I feel like he's not good at the political game. Like he's so, who he was inside was who he was outside. And the second that that changed is what, like, the precipice of this story is. Because that's when it happened. When Cassius convinced Brutus to not be transparent and not be who he is. The second that Cassius was like, this is how it should be. It was like, crack. And that was like the fatal flaw that started this whole thing in motion.
Wow.
Was when his private and public life became two separate things.
Are there other themes or symbols or motifs or anything that you want to go into, Beverly?
There's a lot of talk about fate or choice in this play, similar to Romeo and Juliet. But there's, like, a lot of weird symbols. And, I mean, it makes sense. The Romans were super paganistic, and symbols meant a lot to them. So, lions in the street, not a good sign.
No, that's a really bad day.
Yeah. Have you seen lions in Rome before then?
Oh, yeah. It's so bad.
But, like, only on really bad days?
Only on really bad days. Okay. Tax day, really bad days.
Lion in the street.
Yeah, lion in the street.
Like,
not the verb. Like, a lion.
Yes, a lion. Yeah. A large cat mammal.
Yes.
They can jump up to 16 feet high or far. Yeah, they're crazy.
Wow.
I don't remember if it's 16, but it's too many.
That's scary.
Yeah, big cats.
I need to keep my shit together around the lions.
Yeah, so next tax day, lock your doors.
Yeah, lock the doors.
The thought that just occurred to me right now when you were talking about pagan rituals and then in Romeo and Juliet, you were talking about, like, all the Christianity stuff. Can I just say Shakespeare's a really smart guy?
He is very smart.
He's, like, clearly done a lot of research into all this nonsense, because everything is so detailed, and he really seems to know what he's talking about.
It's said that he was, like, very well-read. That's why there's a lot of theories that it can't be, like, a commoner that wrote these. There's a bunch of theories that he's some...
Which we have to get into at some point, because I'm very curious.
Ugh, I know. He was just very well-versed in the classics. A lot of his plays are based off either other plays or classical plays. Like, I think it's Euripides. I read this Euripides play that is clearly Comedy of Errors in school. And I was like, oh my god, this is great. I already know this plot. I'm going to get an A on this test. And I did. And,
Gold star.
Gold star for Beverly. Yes.
Shakespeare also has a lot of different mythological
things all through. There's a book written by Isaac Asimov, who wrote all of the information about robots. Isaac Asimov wrote this book all about the mythology in Shakespeare's plays.
Wow.
And, like, just this guy that likes robots and mythology.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
They're often very similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Modern day adaptations, besides basically feeling like I'm living Julius Caesar at the moment, so I feel your pain, Portia, and when lions start roaming the streets of America, I will immediately fly. This is my plan. I have two plans.
Oh no.
One is I fly to Vancouver as soon as lions appear in the street, or certain people get elected.
Mm-hmm.
I go up to the first boy that I see, and I say, are you single? We get married. Because I love Vancouver, and I will live there, and it's fine. Second plan, if that doesn't work out, because they generally test you pretty hard to make sure it's not a green card marriage happening, I am going to marry my friend who lives in England, because I've already checked it out, and gay marriage is legal in England.
It breaks my heart that you have someone you can marry in England. I guess technically I do too. Jimmy Dinson, if you're listening to this, I might be coming for your green card marriage soon.
So modern day adaptations, besides living it at the moment, we looked into it. There are a couple versions. There is one that I found called Rinse the Blood Off My Toga. It's a 1958 Canadian comedy in which Roman Private Eye is hired to investigate the murder of Julius Caesar. And it incorporates Shakespeare, Dragnet, and other comedy routines.
Yes, please.
It's obviously a parody, friends. So there is also a version that you want to talk about, Caesar Must Die?
Yeah. When I started doing Julius Caesar this past summer, I guess, and I had never seen the play performed. Mm. Actually, the first time I read it was right before auditions. And I wanted to see, get more information and get a visual on it. Mm. And so I watched this movie called Caesar Must Die, which tells a story of, I think it's a documentary, it's a little bit dramatized, but this, a jail in Italy where they did Julius Caesar with a bunch of the inmates. And it was so interesting, and I highly recommend it, because there's all these scenes where they're talking about, like, the betrayal and the fact that they're, like, working together, but there's all these factions within the jail, and then coming together and doing this play was really cool for them.
I did also find a modern day version called An Honorable Murder, I believe. Mm. It's from the 60s, and it basically just updates it to a corporation where somebody's going to be left in power of the corporation, and somebody else is saying, I don't think that we should let him be in power. Why don't we try and vote him to be off the board, and we'll get you in charge? And it just says there are consequences.
Dun,
so
dun,
maybe
dun.
Someone gets murdered accidentally.
They just stab them with, like, golden pens instead. Like, they're
props.
Really nice executive
props.
Interesting. That's
and,
cool.
Like, Mean Girls, a little bit.
Whoa!
What?
Yeah, I think Regina's Caesar.
Okay.
And then you have the people that they don't like her. And so the two cronies
are Cassius.
Make Lindsay Lohan
Brutus.
Brutus. Brutus takes over. I mean, she literally pushes her in front of a bus. It's a stretch. It's like Lion King and Hamlet, but, like, it's there.
It's there.
It's there.
Also,
all
Lion
right.
King 2?
Yeah,
Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yeah! She's already on board!
Portia's very up on the pop culture.
I mean,
I
you only
say.
Get to watch. That's all you can do when you're dead is
you
watch.
Just, like, sneak into people's houses
and
watch what they watch. Yeah, because you can't, like, affect
and
it.
And
yeah.
Mean Girls is always on.
So. Always on somewhere.
So it's great.
You just gotta head to the valley and there's
yeah,
someone watching
it's,
it.
Yeah, because it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So those are our modern day adaptations. So now we are going to talk about technical aspects.
Yeah.
What are you going to teach me about from Julius Caesar?
So we're actually going to talk a little bit about the history and how these plays were published back in the day.
Oh, that history. Not the history of Julius Caesar.
No.
Gotcha. I'm on board.
You're on board. Great. So at the time, playwrights didn't publish plays. Like, it wasn't a thing that they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's some quote where a guy was like, I hate the idea of someone, like, reading something that was supposed to be performed, which is hilarious because most of the time, Shakespeare's read now instead of performed, which is why it's so important to go out and see it when you can, because it's so much better when it's performed.
True life.
When they did plays, when Shakespeare was doing his plays, they would have one official copy called a prompt book that basically a stage manager would have, and it had, like, stage directions, it had actors' names written all over it, a bunch of notes, so it wasn't a clean copy. The actors themselves would have their own lines and the cue line before it to study from so they could memorize their lines, but it wasn't like there were a bunch of copies of this play floating around. So what started happening was certain people would copy down the prompt book and publish it to make some side money. And sometimes people would just try and write down the play from memory after seeing it and then publish that to make money.
Oh yeah, I remember Richard III off the top of my head. Yeah. Let me just write it all down.
Yeah.
What is your name, Patrick Stewart? Get out!
So there were all of these versions of the plays with different typos or things put in different places. And there's a couple of terms you might have heard if you are interested in Shakespeare, quarto and folio. Quarto just means they were small books and they were cheaper. You could fold the paper twice to make it into fours, hence quarto. So they were cheaper to make because you could print a bunch of pages on each of those. Those were the ones that were like really underground. It was basically like the equivalent of people selling torrents. Maybe you know what I'm talking about, some of you future children.
I have a very blank look on my face. I've never heard this term before.
Have you really never?
I was going to say pirating something.
Yeah, that's what torrenting is.
Okay, so no, just say pirating then. Why you gotta be fancy? Why you gotta start using Shakespeare language to explain it?
My bad. What I mean when I say torrenting is just like a way to share a file that's not yours, like a TV show, or sometimes people do it for Broadway musicals, which is, I think, the best equivalent, because like if you sell an illegal copy of a Broadway musical, since it's impossible to get that unless you have this illegal copy, you're in like Kansas, Missouri, and you know Hamilton isn't touring there yet, and you have an illegal copy of it, that's like something that would be of value to you. You might pay money for that. You shouldn't. It's illegal. Don't do it. Go see Hamilton live. Eventually, though, they started printing out folios as well. Folio was a larger book printed with a sheet folded in half, so like
normal book
basically. And some of Shakespeare's like actors and people that knew him collected all of his plays all together into a folio, and that's called the first folio. There were more plays added later that were collected as well. But because of this, it basically means we have all of these copies of the plays, and some of them are different and some of them have different words, which is why when you read certain copies, we were talking about this with Hamlet, parentheses or different symbols in your version of the play, that you can buy now, that's because might have been different in the quarto, might have been different in a folio, stuff like that. Now, what's cool about Julius Caesar and why I bring it up for this play is there's a really interesting scene. So Act 4, Scene 3, we hear about Portia's death. Sorry, Portia. She gave me a look. So they talk about her death pretty much three times. It's mentioned when Brutus and Cassius are alone, and Brutus says, Portia's dead. And then Cassius says, that's so sad. And then it's brought up again. Cassius is like, so Portia's dead, right? And Brutus is like, yeah. And then Messala comes in and says, hey, I haven't had any news from Portia in your letters. And Brutus is like, what do you think happened? And Messala's like, she must be dead. And Brutus is like, you're right, she must be dead. And so one of the theories is that maybe this was remembered wrong by audience member number 6 and copied into a quarto somewhere.
Come on, audience member number 6.
Come on. They think that it's a combination of some versions of the play of Julius Caesar, and either didn't know which one was the right one, or thought it worked, or didn't notice, whatever. But that's the play we have now. We have this coming up three times in a row. So one example, they found a butchering of Hamlet's famous speech in a quarto, just to show you how different they could be. Instead of saying, to be or not to be, that is the question, it said, to be or not to be, aye, there's the point, to die, to sleep, is that all? Aye, all. little less magical.
Audience member number 6, you're fired.
You're fired, audience member number 6. So go see live shows.
Portia, can I ask if you would like to revisit your past? Oh. Would you like to perform a scene with Portia?
Oh my god, yeah. I would be honored.
Oh yeah,
will of you course. Be honored?
I will be honored and honor you.
Wow.
There's lots of honor.
It's true, I will be your husband in this scene. Thank you. Is that chill?
Yeah, no, that's chill, because he's kind of a dick usually. And you're
you guys don't hang out?
Nah, I mean, he didn't really go to heaven.
Ooh.
Whoa!
Ooh, spoiler alert, everyone!
I'm just saying, like, he's not in my veil.
All right.
And maybe it's like my heaven just doesn't include him because he's a liar and I'm really frustrated.
You're really mad he didn't mourn you better.
I just don't get it. I mean, I guess she's dead.
So in this scene, Brutus has just had his meeting with Cassius and all the conspirators, and they have decided to murder Caesar. Now everyone is left except Brutus, and Brutus is just sort of left in his study. And Portia comes out and talks to him for the first time. This is the first time we see Portia speak. Because we might have seen her, you walk around.
Yeah, well, during the loop recall.
Yeah, you're there.
I'm there. Around. Get shooed away by Cassius.
That's right. Rude. Ugh, it's all about Calpurnia, isn't it?
All about Calpurnia. She's infertile. Whatever.
All right. Well, anyway, so here's the scene.
Brutus, my lord.
Portia, what mean you? Wherefore rise you now? It is not for your health thus to commit your weak condition to the raw, cold morning.
Nor for yours neither. You've ungently, Brutus, stole from my bed, and yesternight at supper you suddenly arose and walked about, musing and sighing with your arms across, and when I asked you what the matter was, you stared upon me with ungentle looks. I urged you further, then you scratched your head and impatiently stamped with your foot. Yet I insisted, yet you answered not, but with an angry wafter of your hand, gave sign for me to leave you, so I did, fearing to strengthen that impatience, which seemed too much enkindled, and withal hoping it was but an effect of humor, which sometime hath his hour with every man. It will not let you eat, nor talk, nor sleep, and could it work so much upon your shape as it much prevailed upon your condition, I should not know you, Brutus. Dear my lord, make me acquainted with the cause of your grief.
I am not well in health, and that is all.
Brutus is wise, and were he not in health, he would embrace the means to come by it.
Why, so I do, good Portia. Go to bed.
Is Brutus sick? And is it physical to walk unbraced and suck up the humerus of the dank morning? What? Is Brutus sick, and should he steal out of his wholesome bed to dare the vile contagion of the night and tempt the roomy and unpurged air to add unto his sickness? No, my Brutus. You have some sick offense within your mind, which by the right and virtue of my place I ought to know of.
Scene. Beautiful.
Ah, thank
my
you.
My God.
Yeah.
You were so mad that he was not telling you.
He's lying.
I know.
Not unsympathetic to my death and lying. That's just what I can't handle.
Yeah, I get it.
It's just, that's the deal breaker. It's total turn off. I agree.
I mean, and like, I end up killing myself later because, like, he's just not talking to me. Like, he kills this guy and has, like, no remorse about it. He rises to power and he's not talking to me. It's all about communication. Part of the reason I ate fire is because when you eat fire, it, like, closes off your throat and you have no power. You have no way to communicate. And that's why
I you felt fashion.
Like, in that fashion, yeah.
It reflected your life.
Like, because poison's a feminine thing. This was a very masculine way to die.
Thank you so much, Portia, for being on our show.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It was great to, like, communicate through the veil.
I know. Thanks for coming to this side of the pond.
Yeah, definitely come over to my house. We'll watch Netflix together.
Great. Will you listen to me?
I can't. This link only lasts for so long.
Damn it.
But I'll do my best to pick and choose. I'm Beverly.
This is Allison.
Deuces, peasants!
Yes, it is.
He needs a just whatever.
He needs a woman.
He needs
or
a
man, whatever.
Whatever floats your boat, Cassius. Just get it taken care of. Now, also.
gotta float that boat.
Care of? Whoa.
Don't judge me.
Don't judge me.
No, it can stay in. I don't care. I can get away with saying a lot of stuff. Okay, so.